Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS Network and broadcasting on simulcast on our East City Stargate channel. So you can check it out at either place. There's so much going on today. I wanted to bring John Vivanco with Right Hemispheric Remote Viewing. I wanted to cover a few things, and we can talk about these things during the show, but one of the first things that's been kind of bugging me lately is we're living up here in the mountains and 70-acre ranch, and every time we go to these weather channels, they're like 15 to 10 degrees off, 9 minimum. And they're always on the high side. So they're fudging the numbers constantly. And a lot of farmers and ranchers depend on these numbers to be accurate. So, you know, let's say if they say it's going to be, you know, 36 or, you know, it ends up being 22 degrees, you know, big difference. Things are going to freeze. You know, it's a mess. And so, you know, we're trying to dig out, we're snowed in and everything else. And you go, oh, it's going to thaw out today. They're saying 39 degrees low. And, you know, it turns out to be 24. So anyway, this is an ongoing thing. We've been watching over and over, and we've been seeing it happen in a lot of other communities. And so when you go into the global warming program, you find out that they have the true data, and then they have what they call the adjusted data. It's totally different, and you have to go by the raw data if you really want the facts. And according to the raw data, we are going through climate change, but actually the planet is cooling down. It's not warming. And I think it was Patrick Moore, who was co-founder of Greenpeace, just came out and said this whole thing is a hoax. Scientists top in their fields are all saying the same thing. It's a hoax. NASA is saying the ice sheets are actually growing. They're not shrinking. And everything that they're talking about, this big global warming scare, this program, is just a carbon tax ripoff, basically. So anyway, do the research. You know, type in and forget about the government-paid scientists and the people that are paid to make money off this thing, and they're capitalized on this whole global warming scam. It's why Trump didn't sign the Paris Accords and things like that, because the real data is showing that things are totally different. So, but to me, it's an extreme disservice, especially to farmers, to give you a 10-degree variance and be off that much. Because when you're planting your fields and things like that, you depend on that, you know, for accuracy. And it's totally inaccurate. There's a few other things I wanted to cover, but mainly that was the main thing. That was the main thing that was sticking in my craw. Also, to the Schumann resonance, there's some websites you can go to check out the Schumann resonance, and the Russian ones are the best. It's off the scale. It keeps peaking and whiting out. It they can't even measure it at times. And so it's usually about 7.8 something is the normal. And it's gone up to 150 in the past few days. It's at 50, 40. That's going to create heart palpitations. It's going to create all kinds of crazy things going on with your body. People are going to get ungrounded and dizzy. And Stanford research with monkeys, they expose them to changes in the magnetic fields. And they exhibit behavior, everything from comatose to self-mutilation. So when we know these energies are happening, we can adjust for them and just, you know, don't take it personally. Just, you know, if you need to lay down, take a nap. You know, if you feel yourself getting going a little crazy, just separate yourself, go meditate or something, you know, rather than emotional outbursts or dumping on somebody else. So just important to realize we're going through some crazy times. And one of the things I wanted to talk about in this show with John is that we received some information a while ago. This is one of the topics I wanted to talk about, of a very large ship coming in. And the ship had 49 other ships inside of it. And these ships are 250 or so feet, you know, wide. These are big ships inside of the mothership. And they were deployed on around the 5th, between the 5th and the 7th. And they've taken up strategic points on the planet, and they're working with us, you know, helping us go through this shift that we're going through. Everybody has a different name for it. Some people just call it the shift. Some people call it this convergence, you know, there's a million different names for it, but they're helping us to get through these times, and we are moving through a highly energized place in space in the universe right now, and that's affecting the Earth. And the central sun is activating all the other suns, and we're part of that. So there's a biofeedback loop between the sun and the Earth that's affecting us as well. So there's so many things going on. I don't even know where to start, but I'll start by welcoming John to the show. Welcome to As You Wish Talk Radio. John's been kind of a frequent guest, and you have a workshop coming up too.
Yeah, we've got a workshop out here. This is one of the best places to do workshops because of the energies. So you talked about magnetic fields earlier.
Yeah.
It not only affects people and monkeys in strange ways,
yeah.
but it affects us in positive ways, and you find that out here. These magnetic anomalies will increase this remote viewing ability and create a nice platform for people to learn in. So, but yeah, we're starting, when is this? May 16th, I think.
Yeah.
May 16th and 19th. And it's going to run through the whole remote viewing protocol from start to finish. But, you know, not just that, it's also the energy in the sky watch that we do every night, which, mm-hmm. I mean, things get weird.
Yeah.
Things get weird.
Well, some of the photographs we took of the group energy out there was just...
Yeah, it was crazy.
There was so much energy raining down on the group, you could actually photograph it. Like huge beams, multicolored beams of light coming down.
There was that one photograph of you and I standing there, and there's this ball, like bright ball, like that big. I mean... You can't write that off. That's not like, well, me, it's a reflection off a bug. No way. Nothing is like a headlight staring at us. Yeah.
And then, there's so many. I mean, you can actually cut it with a knife here. The energy is so thick, you know, and you can photograph it and everything else. But there's so much going on with this. Just go to eSETI.org if you want to find out more. All the information is there on the website. But I wanted to talk a little bit about, you did some remote viewing on this ship, and can you share with us what you
that
saw?
That was interesting because what happens when we look at these things is that we'll approach it from a blind perspective, so we don't know what we're looking at beforehand. Mm-hmm. And what often happens is that with these types of things, when there's heavy duty intelligences involved that feel you coming into it, they'll block and push you off. So this was actually a repeated entry. So if we didn't have this repeated entry into it, then we wouldn't be able to get the information that we want to get. So, mm-hmm. so you're in there for a little bit and then you get knocked out. You're in there for a little bit, then you get knocked out. So that was really interesting about this. But what we were seeing were the absolute importance and focus of what they were doing. Now, there were these beings that were described as wearing these purple smocks, and they had this, it was sort of a brown belt that went across their chest and then around their waist. And they had this interesting hat. It was, you know, it was like almost fin-like at the top. Went up almost fin-like.
Kind of like a llama hat?
Similar to that and some kind of symbol on it. Mm-hmm. And the hat looked dark in color. And these guys were like beeline laser focused going towards other beings that reside here. And so I think we're talking about, you know, for instance, the feline that actually reside in the area. And so these beings were going straight for them. For some definitive purpose, it was like to get information, to get locations, because there was an operation that they were going to do. And so we had these ships that were, you know, like battle type ships in nature.
Yeah.
Lots of those. But then there was all this other support around it as well. So not just this, you know, these attack ships, but these... this like hospital type or energetic type, you know, supporting energy, maybe even like a
med ship.
Exactly. Stuff like that. So it seemed like, I mean, it was so serious too. It was just so focused. Humans can be focused, but they can't be focused like these guys can be focused. Uh-huh. We have a tendency to go ADD in just about everything, you know, but these guys were just, you couldn't even break it. And they probably didn't even notice us trying to poke into their focus a little bit to see what they were doing, you know. Maybe every once in a while, get away, little fly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting to see. Now, as far as what they're doing, you know, there's where we would go in and then get knocked out, and get knocked out.
And we got the same thing. They said, you know, it's best right now not to say to know. They said, until the operation's over.
Right.
Which is understandable because, you know, really everybody exists in this sea of consciousness. And if you're attuned at all, you know what's going down. And so putting that into the field would warn other beings that they're trying to get rid of, you know, the tyrants and the other.
Yeah, this is the thing is that anybody can feel into this stuff.
Yeah.
Anybody can. It's just that we play around in our heads so much and you have to go to a different place. You have to go to the silent zone.
Yeah.
Outside of language, outside of the head, but anybody can feel into it. Anybody.
I have a feeling these helmets that they had, they were like PSI helmets. They're like psychic projection. Probably you might even call it a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure.
Right.
And it was both sensing and taking care of business or something like that. And I remember you saying they were dark purple, real dark purple, almost black or really dark.
Really dark purple. Yeah.
And I remember a past life where I actually wore one of those uniforms and I wrote about it in my book. Actually, I wrote about it. And those guys are a galactic police force. That's the only way I can say it. They're extremely well trained.
Right.
Like a galactic force. And so, definitely they're here for business.
You know what's interesting? So with remote viewing, you're going into higher order concepts about it.
Yeah.
And from what I've seen, so with remote viewing, we always get this lower order descriptive, low level descriptive that describes it. Mm-hmm. But from what, you know, since we've been doing stuff together, it's really interesting because you'll have these higher level concepts about the same stuff that we're coming up with that shows up in our data. So it's, so it's really interesting how that begins to correlate and takes, you know, a lot of what we do into this idea of a higher level concept of what these things are, where they're from. Because, you know, we don't get that in remote viewing. We don't get the language of locations or the language that goes on that higher order of concepts. You know, I mean, where are they from? You know, if we have to point to a location somewhere in our known universe, you know, where are they from?
Yeah.
You know, we could describe their planet, but do we have a name for that?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly. Well, I thought it was amazing how just out of the blue, your group there got these feline beings.
Right.
In the ships and there's feline beings. They kept coming up with this feline. They go, I don't get it. These are like cat people or something. They couldn't figure it out. And,
and
we've been talking about working with these feline beings for quite some time. And they're a very advanced race. They're from the fifth to the seventh dimensional beings. And they're everything from humanoid feline beings to more like a panther to a lion.
Yeah.
Upright lion type being.
Yeah. And that was so weird for us because, you know, we get the run of the mill stuff. We get the, you know, big headed, bug eyed kind of things.
Yeah.
And so we get used to that. But then when one of those shows up in a session, then the viewers are like, I don't know. I think I might be making this up because it's not big headed, bug eyed guy. But it was all over the place.
Yeah. And when they came to me and I was working with them, I go, am I losing it here? I'm overactive imagination. What is this?
Right.
You know. And then I go back and I look in history. And in India, they call them Nrsingha. And the village, when the bandits would come to raid the village, they start praying to Nrsingha. And the bandits would be knocked off their horses, their clothes would get shredded, and they'd run away. And they'd never see, never see these beings because they're fifth dimensional beings. And they can interface with the third dimension, but we can't see what's going on. But they would protect the villages, and they would come in. And Nerissa, there's all these different, you know, they're the protectors of the gods.
Right,
and,
right, they are.
Yeah.
They are. You know, that's interesting. We do a lot of weird stuff too, not just straight remote viewing on events. We use remote viewing in totally different ways. One of those ways is looking at, there was this location that we ran across in the constellation of Lyra near the star Vega.
Yeah.
And in this location is this sort of hub where all these beings come together and meet about things. And when we started to go there, that's when we at first actually came across these cat-like beings, which, you know, I don't think they're related to here, but that was actually the first time that we ran across these guys. And they're out there. There's all sorts of, I mean, it's just a whole array of different types of beings.
Yeah, they're scattered throughout the...
And they're scattered throughout the universe.
Because I always tell people go, this group is from here, this group is from here. And they're like, they're galactic, you know, in order. They travel all over the place. And so they do have some origins, like a lot of the seventh dimensional feline beings are in Sirius. They come from that system. And they're protecting these beings there that are just incredible beings, you know, very powerful beings. But the but they're in Lyra, they're in ancient Lyra, they're all the more humanoid ones are in Lyra in that system.
Right.
But it's just like the Orion system, there's a lot of myths around everything is evil in Orion. You know, the reptilians and the greys come from Orion. Well, they invaded Orion and they invaded colonies of peaceful people that are just like us, the same genetics basically.
Right.
And there are some great wars that went on there, and they finally won and they cleaned that up. And a lot of those entities came to Earth. And they're part of this Archon grid that we talk about, you know, these reptilian and grays and tall grays and things like that. And a lot of people don't realize is that the people that had to deal with them in the Orion system are now coming to Earth to help us deal with them.
Right. You know, that's something that I had heard. You know, one of the things that the way we approach this is that we, the way we task remote viewers on this kind of stuff is that we usually take a known. And so one thing that's hard for us is to get to that point of the known in order to be able to task something like it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have books like Lissa Royal and those on that type of stuff. And when I read those things and then I hear what you're talking about, it holds true. There's this kernel of truth for me in it. And then when we are able to get that known and then view it, then it opens up this whole other universe for us as remote viewers. Because, you know, it's funny because when we work projects, we work in this very strange, restrictive way because we have this, you know, protocol methodology-based, you know, scientific background when we go into it. Because to me, you know, when we do a project on something and we come to a conclusion, you know, we've got five remote viewers on it, maybe with 20 different taskings, 20 different sessions, and we do analysis. For me, it becomes a situation where it's 90% correct after we do analysis. So it becomes this truth, this known thing. And so it's kind of like this interesting game of hopscotch that I play with going from a known, opening it up, taking stuff in the data and then tasking on that, even though it's not a known to us physically, it becomes a known in the data. And so this is where, you know, I run this path of hopscotching and just basically going down this rabbit hole of amazing and weird areas to go into, you know?
I know I talked with, God, it was back in the 90s. I think it was Joe McGonigal.
McGonigal.
And he was interesting. And I was showing him all these pictures of all these beings that I was interacting with. And he goes, you know, I know, you know, that stuff is out there and exists.
Right.
He said, but we don't do that, you know.
I know.
And I go, well, I don't understand. What do you do? And he said, well, we kind of go known targets, you know.
Right.
We go around buildings. We look through in windows. We go into the building. And it's all done on this certain level,
right.
I guess.
Right. Those guys. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And he was explaining to me how there was a scientific technique that, you know, kind of like they were trained this way.
Right.
You know? But a lot of them said, you know, people come to me and they say, you know, we've had these experiences, you know, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what's happening on the next level.
Right.
You know, the next.
And Joe, I mean, the ex-military guys, I mean, in the military, really the biggest thing that they're doing is looking at buildings.
Like
looking at
compounds,
looking at buildings. But then Joe was hired out by a friend of mine, Tund, who wrote the book Remote Viewing Aliens or Remote Viewing the Visitors. I can't remember the name of it. And he used Joe basically for the whole thing. So he basically tasked Joe on just alien stuff. So I think Joe got used to that. And as far as civilian remote viewers go these days, I mean, the sky's the limit. Everybody wants to task on anything that's know, not in the current literature. And so, you know, that's the exploration currently in remote viewing is conspiracies and aliens, even going into the multidimensional realm, really, you know, because a lot of people start to think this alien phenomena is limited to some physical realm, but it's not. It's just
there's multidimensional.
I mean, you could feel around right now there's stuff.
Well, what I've seen from my experience is that, and I'm not trying to say there's a hierarchy, but there is a frequency or a vibration or whatever you want to call it. And some of these fifth dimensional beings, there's people that can't see them. You know, they can see the 4D stuff,
right?
And they'll see all the gnomes and the fairies and the lower 4D in the 4D and all that stuff. And well, it's in more of the upper 4D. And then the lower 4D, there'll be, you know, a lot of discarnate entities and what people would call demons and really messed up. You know, the reptilians and greys and stuff are in that lower 4D stuff. And they'll see all that stuff, and then that's their world. But and they can't. And there's a thing that we were trained. They call it the psychic barrier, and it's above the fourth dimension. You blast out of that, and you get into the fifth dimension. And that's, but they're looking under the psychic barrier, and they're doing great work, and they're seeing things and documenting it and everything else. But a lot of times when you talk to them about this higher dimensional stuff out of, in the fifth dimension on up, they just like, what?
Right.
What are you talking about? You know, that's all myth. You know, that's But then you interact with these beings and you find out they're historically recorded throughout history.
Right.
You know, so
we were doing that. We were going in. I operate we do different types of things, but one of the big things that I have fun doing is operating a group where we use this specific type of remote viewing that I call. What's like image streaming. So you're streaming images, but I have a different term for it. I won't get into that right now, but it's a physics term. But what we do, or what we were doing in part, was exploring fifth dimension, sixth dimension, seventh dimension, and understanding the difference between those. Because there's this clear difference. I mean, when you get into the sixth dimension, we found this just realm of fractals. And it had this feeling of geometric shapes, and it had this feeling of getting things done, right? It was just getting things done focused, expanding and bridging into new areas. And then you go into the fifth dimension, and it was like heaven. You know, it was like probably how a lot of religions think of heaven, and that's probably what heaven is, right?
Yeah.
You know, we go through the fourth dimension into the fifth, but one of the things that we did was we stayed in the fifth dimension and remote viewed something on Earth from the fifth dimension.
Oh yeah, wow, yeah.
Which made it really weird and compressed and flat. It was like chewing on chalk, actually, because it was so. Why?
Yeah. And I noticed a lot of these higher dimensional beings are not even aware of the negativity and all the stuff that happens here until it's brought to their attention. And so us here on Earth, when we're doing clearing work or healing work, we're bringing it to the attention of these higher dimensional beings, and then they can come in and access it. But a lot of them are just, they're beyond it. You know, that's not
whatever you guys.
Yeah, I feel like if you go to a fifth dimensional Pleiadian, you know, they don't have a monetary system. You know, they have free energy. They have unlimited anti-gravity, counter-gravity. They have everything. You know, replicators. They don't want for anything.
Yeah.
And then you're praying. You're going, I need $100,000.
Right.
And they're going, what?
You know? I know. What does that mean?
No, you don't. You don't need $100,000. You need this.
Right,
you know,
right.
And this can be obtained very easily without that other system. And so it's like, it's kind of rough for some of them, but I mean, a lot of them do understand the system that we're in, but, and that's all going to change. That'd be a whole nother subject, but
that's interesting though, because so I have memories when I was living at a Zen center for a while and just always meditating. And when you do that all the time, you know, I mean, you have memories come out of nowhere when they need to come up. And I had memories that dealt with, you know, some earth life, just weird stuff. It's just, oh, that's a lesson right now. And that's why it's coming to me. But when I went through those, I started to hit life outside in other planets. And what I was seeing was that the social structure, what I was seeing a lot of was that there was a, I, a social structure that's so different than this, so foreign, that the structure mm-hmm. was, for instance, you would work for a week, a year, or a week, a month, or a day out of every week, in a sense,
yeah.
if there's a time frame. And outside, you'd work for the good of the community. And then outside of that, you would pursue your spiritual interests. And everything's taken care of. You know, mm-hmm. the whole community takes care. And there's no money. There's
yeah.
no monetary system. It's all fine. It's all good. And then you relate that to how we live now.
Yeah. And the manufactured
lack that we are literally, you know, I mean, in the Matrix, it's like we're batteries.
Yeah.
We're just batteries to feed something else. And that's the big problem that I have with this place that we're in. You know, there are many, but that right there is a really interesting thing that doesn't have to happen here.
Yeah.
It just doesn't.
Well, I think our prosperity has a governor on it.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? I mean, we can go so far and we can work our butts off and we can get so far with it. And then some people who actually kind of sell their souls, you know,
right.
they're the chosen ones that'll be the top, you know, 1% or whatever.
Yeah.
But they have to do things to get there, to
right.
that 1%. But there's a governor on the rest, and it's a manufactured lack that's created globally. And I know that's about ready to be totally undone. That's all collapsing. And it's going to be undone. And we're going to have an extremely prosperous civilization here in the very near future, but we're moving towards a point where you don't need money. And people are going to have a hard time understanding that, but we can't wrap our head around a replicator.
Right.
You know, like, hey, my shoes are kind of worn. I need a new pair of shoes. You throw them in the trasher, you know, and it changes it back to energy, and then you got a new pair of shoes, you know, or whatever, recycles it, you know, or I want this. And pretty soon when you have everything, you realize I don't want all this stuff.
Right.
I just want to chill out.
You know?
I don't want to be responsible for all this stuff anymore.
Right.
I just
right.
want to live simple when you become enlightened. But what I've seen is that this consumer-driven, you know, everything's external, outer appearances, you know, everything is external. That program that we've bought, and we need to undo that consciousness. And in the Palladian civilizations, they take their ships up, their kids up on a ship at a very early age. They turn it into a light ship. They have a near-death experience.
Yeah.
And they know they're one with everything. They know the creators in all creation, and they're in full service mode. And then each kid has its own unique soul purpose, and they know what it is, and they give them everything they need to excel.
Right.
But they have the consciousness of giving back, of service, service to others. They're embroiled in that. And that's the biggest problem we're having on the earth right now, is that you can't have socialism as long as if you take all the wealth and all the power and you centralize it, you're going to have people gravitate to those positions, and they always end up abusing that.
Right.
And then you've got tyranny, you've got genocide, and you have a reoccurring historical thing. But if you have a group consciousness that's all resonating in service, they won't allow this. That will never
Yeah, that
root.
Wouldn't happen. Right.
It'll never take. And so it's all about consciousness. Until we can't just have a sense of entitlement and say, I deserve this, I demand this. Well, what are you giving back,
right.
you know? Are you service oriented? Are you here to create heaven on earth? What are you here because you think you need all this stuff and you demand all this stuff because
right.
your parents or somebody told you that you were
right.
special, you know?
You know that
I don't know how
it's
that
one
works.
Of those things too. It always comes down to fear of death.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately in everybody's life is that just fear of being dead, fear of dying,
yeah.
you know? As if you're going to be here forever, and
mm-hmm.
you'll avoid that actual topic of death.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, you can have a death. Actually, the best thing to do is die while you're alive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That
yeah,
way,
I'm born again.
Right,
I was born again and
yeah.
again and again.
Right, I know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, how many times can you drown, huh?
Ray goes, have you found Jesus? And I said, I didn't know he was lost.
Right, exactly.
Where'd you put him?
Right.
You know? But anyway, you know, these other dimensions. And I'm also saying, too, you know, right now we're really having to look at the anti-Semitic, the anti-Muslim.
Yeah.
All that stuff is up for people. And a lot of these religions, they're all, a lot of them are based on conversion. You got to convert the others.
Right.
And some you have to convert the others. Some, if you don't convert, you die, you know. And they're really heavy programs, and they're all based on the Anunnaki, the bearded gods, and how they behave down here and things like that. And the only solution to that I see is universal law.
Yeah.
We all have to accept universal law. There's some things that are outside of universal law that are in religions that we need to drop if we're going to go forward.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, the control programs and everything else and the judgment and all the other things that are in those programs, because, you know, it's like each religion has some degree of they're the chosen one, and everybody has to become like them.
Right. Yeah.
And that has to go away.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work.
Well, that's the hard thing, is that most people will, I mean, I don't know, it's like when you learn remote viewing, for instance, or you just go into yourself and you meditate, you begin to disassociate with so-called authority figures, and you begin to understand that all information comes from within you.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know Christ?
Exactly.
Go inside. That's what you want to know. Buddha, go inside, because that's where all of that came from.
And that's what they taught.
That's what they taught. Right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, the temple is within.
Right.
You know, you're all gods, children of the Most High.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like,
exactly.
He's saying the temple's within. You become one with the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness and all planes and dimensions throughout the multiverse. But I mean, it's all about the soul. It sits right here, and it's connected to the source, and you expand. And when you expand in awareness and consciousness, you start expanding into these other dimensions, and then you find out you're a multidimensional being existing on a vibrational continuum. You're not just a body and a personality programmed to be a consumer for joy and happiness, because the joy and happiness is within too as well.
Well, you know, it's that layer that people get so caught in of 3D reality, and it's pushed by the media over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And they just stay in this tiny little layer, and that's where the control is. But anytime they want, they can step outside of it and go on themselves, and nothing can touch that.
Yeah.
Nothing can reach that. And drop away from any type of, you know, beautiful package of information that they constantly try to manipulate you with.
Yeah.
You know, and find the source of all things. So right there is a really interesting point, because, you know, when you talk about Earth and the, I don't know, this opening up of society to this new paradigm, how is that going to happen throughout every individual or a mass of individuals on the Earth? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
You know, on the other side of it, I look at it like, wow, that's a huge issue. And would people have to be forced into that? And if they are forced into that by some kind of energetic thing flowing through, would that screw with their own karma of their path of learning? And then, well, let's say that the Earth did move into this new realm of light, and people dropped that stuff and became more spiritually focused. Would a new Earth be created to hold those others, in a sense, so they can continue on a path of learning
another time
where they are, right?
Yeah.
You know? So it just makes me wonder.
Yeah, well, I've been shown multiple Earths, and I was told there's at least 8 Earths that
different timelines and different
going on, which is interesting. But the, you know, going back into that, what I see is that, you know, we were talking earlier about that, about the future, predicting the future and going in and looking at things and how it's so it's not fixed anymore. It's flexible. It's viable. And everybody's making different choices and changing the future and changing the timelines. But I'm seeing over and over again is that it's like the Earth has chosen to ascend and go to the next level. So, and we're on the Earth. So resistance is futile. The Earth is going to go.
Yeah.
And she's going to the next level. And the next level is universal law.
Right.
And the highest frequencies are pure unconditional love and joy and bliss and, you know, seeing the Creator in all creation and service to others, including all creation. And that's where the Earth is going. And we can either go with that flow, make the necessary adjustments, or we're not going to be frequency specific to that evolutionary process that's happening.
Right.
And what I see is there's the inner earth beings, there's the multidimensional beings, and they're all assisting in this process. Like the source itself from the highest dimensions is pressing in, and the earth herself, she's changing. And then you have the collective consciousness. And I think the collective consciousness is basically, they don't have a lot of say so right now, other than how they're going to experience the transition.
Right.
You know, they can't stop the transition. But how they experience this transition, how tight they hold on to the old world and the old ways, is going to determine, you know, how they experience that. That's my concept of it. And there's so much energy coming in, it can't be stopped, you know, which goes back to the Schumann resonance whiting out, you know.
Well, you know, that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, when you talk about, I think earlier you were talking about these the central sun and the other suns, like lighting up the other suns. And we saw that exact same thing when we're remote viewing from this place near Vega. So we saw the same thing, and that's what they had pointed out to us, was that the central sun, and this was, I don't know, like 2 years ago, was sending out a different pulse of energy. It was like a communication that was traveling to these other suns that were in turn pulsing out that same frequency. And this is what's moving towards us. And that is probably in part what we're seeing with these spikes in the Schumann. I mean, it goes back to seven. So it goes, you know, back to its baseline more or less. But then I think these spikes are pretty unprecedented because, I mean, I have not seen it do that. You know, up to 150? I mean, come on.
Well, also NASA turned out their charts, finally released them, and they said that we're just getting slammed. And that we used to get like about maybe 50 hits from other sources, like quasars, things like that. And it's beyond 500 right now. So we're getting pulsed by all these other energies. But on top of that, the cosmic rays, the gamma rays, the X-rays, the ultraviolet, infrared, all that stuff is off the scale. And I think also our magnetic fields are changing right now too and weakening. So that's going to let more of these energies in, and that creates change, and that creates DNA change you know, on every level. So.
Right. Yeah, definitely does. You know, I was going back to, going back to the Earth and talking about how the Earth itself wants to shift, wants to change. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the different realms on the Earth. You know, one of the things, it just reminded me of this. We were looking at Venus the other day. Because there are some anomalous forms, structures on Venus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while we were looking at it, we didn't necessarily get that these things were anything but natural landforms. What happened was all the viewers felt some resistance and then popped into another dimension on Venus where there's actually all this stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So you got to wonder, you know, did Venus or did Mars, for instance, follow the same path that Earth followed, that Earth is following right now, and within the third dimension, this is going to go away, yet we wouldn't even know it. We would move with Earth into a new dimension, fourth dimension, or I don't know, fifth dimension, and someone coming from the third dimension wouldn't see this as it is right now anymore, much like Venus.
Well, another thing about the Pleiades, another one, everybody goes, well, those are blue suns, you know, they can't inhabit life and everything, but they do a jump when they come into that sector. They actually do a jump and they go into another, probably a whole different dimension, which would look totally different than the one that we're looking at. And so, which brings in the multidimensional civilizations out there. They have the ability to drop down into this dimension, like ascended masters that took the body with them can actually come back and manifest a physical body and walk among the people. It's more of a magnetized light body. Yeah. It's not quite as dense, but they have that ability. If you didn't ascend, then you'd have to go through the birth canal. You know?
Right, yeah.
Unless you got some extreme technology, which the other guys have too, and they can jump all over the place.
Right.
But but it's a spiritual technology more than a physical. But what I've seen is that, I'm trying to think where I was going with this, but anyway, with that energy, like the Pleiades, there could be a whole different civilization there, just like on Venus, in either a different timeline or a different frequency or a different dimension that we don't know about. But they have the ability to come through time and hang out with us. Like, Blajee, she's 2 million years ahead of us. And she's an ascended master 2 million years ahead of us coming back.
Right.
And she's a Pleiadian to help us out in these times. So, you know, sorry. It's interesting thinking about this. It's like, you know, it's not so much where you came from, but when.
But when, yeah, exactly.
When did
well, that's
you come
the
from?
Thing, you know, I mean, actually lately I've been getting into physics a lot as far as time goes. And there's this is actually really interesting. There's time is theorized to be a particle and it's non-sequential. It's non-linear. Mm-hmm. And the only reason they can, and they call this a chronon, and the only reason they can call these particles of time chronons is the idea that they are absolutely nonlinear, and so you can move to any point in time from a mm-hmm. physics standpoint.
Yeah.
And actually, we were so that's I mean this that's you know the understanding of physics at least mm-hmm. in their realm too. It's like they can do whatever they want with it, but the thing with this is wild. This was a while back. We were working with this guy, and he was, you know, part of an agency, and he had told us that they had this quantum computer that could see into the future. He said mm-hmm. it was really fuzzy images or see into the past, and it was based off of like a chronon or a quantum particle of time that they're able to isolate. And, you know, I thought, you know, he might be making this up. I don't know. I didn't really believe him. But then years later, I came across this article that talked about something called a chronovisor.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Did you see that?
I heard about it, yeah.
So it was really fascinating to see that, well, it's likely true, you know? I mean, at least from a physics standpoint, humans have gotten, well, at least the visual part down.
Yeah.
As far as, actually, I mean, I'm sure we're able to. You know, Africa's full of these particle accelerators that are deep black projects, and they do a lot of really funky stuff there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, humans have been hiding this technology from the general public for quite a while now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and these guys that are working with it are not willing to show, to give it up, you know? And, you know, you look at this governmental structure over humans.
It's this elite group.
Exactly, this elite group. Whereas, you know, you go to Blajit and these guys, and it's just,
part of their everyday.
Part of their everyday.
Yeah, because I was taught in, you know, in my early training in the self-mastery classes that they had the linear timeline.
Yeah.
And then when you go up in the other dimensions and you connect into spirit, you can come back anywhere on that timeline. You're not... You know, when you're in a physical body, you're stuck on that, wherever you are, you're on that timeline.
Right.
But in the spirit world, it doesn't exist. Time's not like we know it. So you can actually incarnate. But then why would you, you know, why would you incarnate into barbaric times when you don't know if a dinosaur is going to eat you or you're going to get bludgeoned by a sword or a spear or something, you know? So, you know, it's interesting because it does seem like you would, you know, it'd be interesting. You know, if you went back, you'd be a god, you know?
Right.
You'd be treated as a god with your knowledge you have now.
Right. Well, you know, here's the other thing, too, is that locations like this, and there's something we were talking about the other day, hanging out, and locations like this, there's, like, around the Superstition Mountains.
Yeah.
There's Shasta. I mean, there's, you can actually find these locations if you know what to look for. But here... You guys were talking, so I'd been investigating pterodactyl
sight,
because there's a load of pterodactyl sightings around here, if you can believe that. And you were telling me that you saw one. And so my question becomes, okay, since we've viewed the heck out of this place, there are strange, like, dimensional things here where the portals are so thin.
Yeah.
And so you also got to wonder if there's a time component to this that's going back to the past because of what you and some others have seen here.
Yeah.
You know, this pterodactyl thing. And they see it in other locations around here. Have you, I don't know, I mean, it's endlessly fascinating to me, this location, because of these tears that happen here and things coming through it. So I'm yeah, it's just
yeah, the pterodactyl thing. They had a lot of police have seen it, and one guy drove his car off the road because it was eating a roadkill, and the cop was right behind him.
And
he was just right up on the hill. But he was saying that he wouldn't have believed the guy if he didn't see it himself. The cop said, "I would have arrested him." And when he walked up to the guy's door, all he could say was, he couldn't even say it. He was kind of trying to say pterodactyl. And he was like, he was shaking up so bad. And he goes, if I hadn't seen it myself, I would have arrested this guy for being on drugs or something, But it's and I had a group here, and it went flying right, cruising between us and the mountain. And we had binoculars on it, and I handed the binoculars over to these friends and other people at it. I go, what do you see? And he goes, this one friend of mine, Rich, looks at it, and he goes, he puts the glasses down. I go, I don't know. I don't know. Tell me, what did you see? And he goes, it's a pterodactyl. He said, I thought it was a dragon at first because it had no feathers or anything, but I saw the ball. Right. It's a pterosaurus
on the
end of its tail, and which is a pterosaurus. And I said, so, and I saw the ball, and the other guys all saw it too. And then it landed in a tree here and was just screeching one night. And I walked out there with a night vision. I was looking at it, and I hit it with a laser, and it screeched, and it flew over the whole group, that was here at the time skywatching.
I think this is probably our next project on mine is
pterodactyl.
Because I found these other sightings around Yakima region, out near some river out there, where these people will watch them. Because pterodactyls apparently... I don't know if this goes is the same. I don't know if scientists found this out or if this is just through observation. I know in Papua New Guinea they claim they have these bioluminescent lights on them, and so people apparently see them flying around and getting fish out of this river out in the Yakaba region. And then you've got sightings that have actually happened along Columbia Gorge. You've got them here. So there's got to be a location where you can actually go capture these things on film. Because, when you get into the parent, I don't know if this is paranormal. So, this was my question, is that are we slipping through some sort of aberration in time and they're showing up? Or do they actually live here somewhere?
When a ship does a jump, it leaves the door open for just enough time for something. But also too, there's inner earth things going on, and they have everything preserved on the inner earth, and there's all kinds of caves and things that go forever around this area.
True.
So maybe something climbed out out of a cave. I don't know. There's some, it'd be good to remote view that and see what you get.
Yeah. We're going to look at that. We were looking at, I really like the bat squatch thing.
Yeah.
The bat squatch thing is pretty funny. The name just kills me, but
Bigfoot's enough. I mean, there's Bigfoot's so many Bigfoot enough. Running
like a,
around here.
Like a Bigfoot with bat wings. I don't know about that, but
I mean, anything's possible, but I it's hard for me to wrap my head around.
Well, we looked at
wings
that. So there was, I know. So we were
Bigfoot,
looking at,
because they're so huge anyway. They'd have to have a massive set of.
I know. It's got to be huge.
Or they're paranormal, or they're interdimensional or something.
Right. Well, this, and that's exactly what we saw. So there's this sightings that were happening around, like up in the foothills of Tacoma, Washington, when you get towards Mount Rainier. There were a couple of sightings of. Being they term bat squatch because, it looked like a bat with wings or, Sasquatch with wings. So when we looked at this, it was absolutely dimensional. It was real. Okay. So first off, the guy wasn't making it up. These people are not making it up. So this thing is dimensional. It's coming in and out of something, but it's not so much a bat squatch as it is a Mothman.
Yeah.
So when you get into the whole Mothman realm, that's what it is.
That's probably,
exactly. It falls into that. And that's when those things start showing up, then
something big is going to go down.
Yeah.
When they show up.
Down. I would hate to see it. Bat squatch out here.
I'd start digging my underground.
I know. Time to find that cave.
Find a cave. But it's pretty crazy. There's so much going on here, and just on the light side too. There's the fairies and the elven beings and all this stuff and the photographs. Light photographs.
Like there's a person here that
Kathy.
Kathy.
Yeah.
That I swear, that stuff has got to be shown. That is the most amazing stuff. Because, literally, you see that's a, like, you just go, that's a fairy. Or, yeah, wait a second, that's a troll with a magic wand.
Yeah, exactly.
How does that work? Yeah. You know? I mean, I remember when she first told me, I had a picture of a troll with a magic wand. I'm like, no, you didn't. Uh-huh. You did not. Right. And then I see this, she shows it, and I'm like, no way, it's mind-blowing. It's so mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I just can't get over this place. You know, this place is like, where else is this kind of stuff happening that it's being watched on a regular basis?
And documented.
And documented. But think about this from the standpoint of physics. It's like the double slit experiment, is that there's something happening by your observation of it.
Yeah.
It's changing it, or it's creating more of it. You know what I'm saying? When you think about in terms of physics and how we affect reality, I mean, you know, just by the observation of it out here, it's got to be doing stuff to it or bringing more out, you know?
I have two different theories on that. One is the veils are thin here, very thin,
right?
Because of magnetic anomalies and things like that. And two, it's the consciousness. You know, we see with our brain,
right?
And our brain chooses out of billions of bits of information coming through our eyes what is going to be real for us. And so it's incorrect to say, you know, I'll believe it when I see it,
right?
If you want to see something, you have to have conscious, you have to be conscious of it.
Yep.
And then you have the experience. And there's a lot of conscious people up here. And so they're creating that reality. They're interacting with these beings. And the more you interact with them, the more they come, and they interact with you as well.
Right.
And so, like, where somebody, if somebody had a lot of fear and a lot of judgment, you know, and a lot of, you know, kind of negative religious connotations going, they might have another experience here.
Right.
It might just freak them out.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I've had one guy who's really scientific, and he's going, oh, you know, I counted, you know, there's nothing but satellites up there. I counted 75 satellites and like that. And I said, well, there's only, you know, about four
that
you can see.
Yeah,
that pass by that you can see with the naked eye, according to Heavens Above and the other ones. And he says, there's no UFOs up there. And I said, well, you just counted, you know, you counted 70 plus UFOs because the other ones you couldn't see.
Right.
But, you know, it says right there, visible satellites. It'll tell you how many satellites are visible in your area.
Right.
And tell you where they are, when, everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people like that, it's they come up with an attitude and they create that reality. You know?
Yeah. I've noticed that. I've noticed that here. When there's somebody who has a very, they're angry. Like, they're very angry.
Yeah.
And they're just holding it and holding it. It almost stops all phenomena.
It does. It's amazing.
Yeah. When, I think the most amazing times are, you know, when a conference or a workshop, when you have a focus group of individuals.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. That's the thing. So, if you guys want to come to the remote viewing class, you got to sign up for it fast, because I think this is going to probably fill up.
Yeah.
Because the weird stuff happens.
Yeah.
The weird stuff happens.
It does. Yeah. And it's all about, and the more you engage it, the more it happens here.
Exactly.
What better place to do the remote viewing class?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Bring your GoPros, your cameras, just set them out.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We'll have a good time.
Yeah.
We're at the end of the hour. So, I guess the best way to get in contact with you is through your website.
Yeah, righthemispheric.com. I've got a book, wrote a book, Time Before the Secret Words, got workshops there. Also at the eSETI website, you can go sign up for this class
Great.
Or get it through my website either way.
Awesome. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, folks. We could have had a 2-hour show here, but we've got to sign off. So, you know, it's all about, you know, an open mind, loving heart, pure intent. Basically, that's the bottom line. And the mind in which you seek is the mind in which you connect. So raise your consciousness. Anyway, this is James Gillen and John Bovanko saying goodnight.